Krull, Ishtar, and Howard the Duck. It's Box Office Bombs next on Tom and Hank Talk About the 80s. Hi, Tom.
Hi, Hank.
How are you?
I'm going to think about that.
Okay.
You know what? I'm going to take these headphones off and walk away for a minute.
Okay.
I'm fine. Everything's great. I was told to say everything's wonderful, no matter what. You can tell by the enthusiasm in my voice how great things are.
Yeah. Well, we'll start this off by saying sorry that we didn't get an episode out last week. And it's really nice that a few people did tell us, hey, are we getting an episode this week? No. Last week was complicated.
I spent part of that time in an emergency room.
You did?
What did you do?
I was the reason you were in the emergency room.
Oh, yeah.
So, well, that actually sounds like I hit you or something. I'm the one that put you there.
You ran me over with a tractor.
I
just like the old days.
Well,
in Fargo.
A week ago today, I called you when I was walking my dog and said, "Hi, I'm having chest pains. Can you come meet me?" And you did.
Yep.
We then called, you were nice enough to come over to my home, and we called my doctor, and they said, "Oh, it's just, you know, indigestion. Have a cracker and some Tums." And I did, and it relatively went away. And then on Thursday, I called you because the chest pains that I was having came back, and then the pain was radiating between my shoulder blades, and I was like, here we go. I'm almost 49 years old, and this is right on track. I'm having a heart attack. So I called you at work, and I then went to the emergency room.
And then I did.
And then you followed me, thank God.
It was a nice place.
After you yelled at me because I drove to the emergency room.
Yeah, I had a friend one time that drove to the hospital after he collapsed at the wheel of his car and woke up at 4 a.m. and realized he was still in the car and didn't know what happened and drove himself to... And so I'm sensitive about that kind of thing.
Yes, I am too, because I know that person
like,
as well.
Call fucking Lyft, at least.
Well, I didn't have time, and I was like, I was pretty sure I was dying, and I had worked myself up into a proper panic attack at that moment, because I was like, okay, I'm alone. I think there's a pain down my arm. I don't know if it is or not, and my Fitbit said that my heart rate was like 942. And I was like,
which is beats per minute.
Yes. And I was like, here we go. Here we go. So I get to the emergency room. Right away, I say, I'm sure it's just a panic attack. I'm under an incredible amount of stress these days. And, you know, all these things. So I'm doing relatively okay once I'm there because they take everything. They take an EKG the moment I walk in. Like, I'm feeling relatively good. And then you walk in. The moment you walked in, go ahead.
I was just going to say, the nurses were all smoking a joint in the corner.
Basically.
There was a knife fight in one corner. Someone had slashed all the chairs in a drunken rage.
I mean, thank God I live 2 blocks away from an emergency room, but boy.
I came in and I was like, oh my God, I'm here for my friend Hank. They're like, have a seat, sir. And I was like, okay. And I turned around and walked away and kept looking like, is everything going to be okay? And then they got me and brought me in and said, your father's, we're taking you to him now. And I was all, excuse me? And he was like, I'm so sorry to hear about your father. And I was like, what? Wait, what the fuck happened?
And I was like, and then you told me that. I was like, what?
You're his son. We thought you were his son. And I was like, Hank Hedlund? I'm like, we're the same age. Like, what the hell?
I never said son.
No.
And so I think the nurse was in there. Were they hooking up my IV or something when you came in?
The IV, you were already plugged into several wires and computers.
Oh, I was all plugged up. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. You were plugged up and plugged in.
Well, they came in and they were kind of rushing around me a little bit.
Yeah.
Maybe not. That's what I'm thinking. And you went into the corner of the room and I just looked you straight in the eye and I just started to weep.
Yes.
Just because, well, I was like, Tom's here and I am probably not dying, but I don't know if I am.
It's very scary. And, that, you know, I was in an emergency room not that long ago with my girlfriend's grandfather. Anyway, so I made a joke about the code blue button.
Yes, you did.
And I took a photograph of it, and I was going to say something funny, and then I was like, I wonder what that is. And I looked it up, and it's like, you know, only if the victim, you know, not even patient, if the victim is cardiac arrest, you know, do not hit the blue button. And I was like, oh, my God.
I'm not going to say that to him right now. It's
really code blue. Like, oh, my God. Well, because we had the same thing at Kmart, the blue light special. And so in my mind, code blue was like...
Wonderful.
That was an awesome thing. Hit the fucking button.
Oh my God, when we were little...
Over and over again.
And we were in Kmart and the blue light special came on. Like, yeah. That was a big deal.
What was it like for you? It was like a shopping cart with a blue light on it over in Scotts Valley.
I think, yeah. Because they had to move it around.
Yeah, it was literally just a shopping cart with a few things in it.
And then, well, or put next to, if I'm remembering correctly, like put next to the item that was on...
Yeah.
That blue light special. And it was like 10 minutes.
It was code blue buttons. Everybody wanted one.
Well, just to cut an extremely long story long, I'm fine.
Well, you're lucky because when the nurse tapped onto the screen and was like, we're not sure what this is. This is some sort of glitch. And he's like, you know what? We're going to restart the system. And then he left the room. And then I was like, what do you mean, dude? What are you talking about? Like his heart, the fucking computer, the code blue button, what?
The nice thing about it was that they ran so many tests for my heart. Now I know that my heart is like tip-top shape.
Yeah, it's fucking awesome.
Like, I don't have to worry about a thing.
Yeah.
So I'm still experiencing a little bit of the discomfort, not like I was. And you know what? It's stress.
Mm-hmm.
I was extremely stressed again, and I still am. And it is purely the way that I'm manifesting my stress. Mm-hmm. And... worry and all of those things. So, like we always say, take care of yourselves and take care of your friends and check in with your friends. We're all having a thing right now. What is that Mercury thing still?
No, it ended the day our first day of Disneyland.
Part of the Disneyland Spectacular, episode 36, if you'd like to listen.
Yeah. I'm still suffering. You know, you thought it was bad being in an emergency room, think you're having a heart attack. Imagine how I feel being back in Alameda after 3 days at Disneyland with my girlfriend. Like, I am suffering.
I'm sure you are.
All I've done is watch videos about the history of Disneyland for hours at a time at work. And there's this kid, I don't know how old he is. Is he a grown-up? He's some guy that's like...
Is he a grown-up?
He has a blog on YouTube called Offhand Disney. And he is hilarious and very, 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 very knowledgeable about Disneyland history and the rides. And not just Disneyland, but Disney World. And I find him to be a soothing voice in my Disney, post-Disney blues right now.
You should tell me who it is so we can like put a link up or something.
Offhand Disney. That's what it's
Offhand like. Disney.
Yeah, and
Offhand
that's his YouTube page, and it's great.
Well, I know you left it.
I did.
And I know you still have fond memories, which you should. It was only like a week and a half ago.
God damn it.
But right before, like the day of my first experience of this weird... heart pain, chest pain, my doctor suggested that I go on a vegetarian diet.
Mm-hmm.
So I've been a vegetarian for a whole week and extremely easy for me. Like, you can just have, I mean, it's easy to have vegetarian food.
It's so easy. I don't know why. I don't know why.
You know, I'm not vegan.
I'm not a vegan either.
But it's just so easy to do.
I'm not even a vegetarian, but my diet is mostly vegetarian because my girlfriend is, but like, people are like, oh my God, I just, oh fuck.
I don't know if I could do it.
I just couldn't do that. Like, oh my God, well, I would fucking starve.
I mean, I think when I was still heavy, when I still had the weight on me a couple, 2 years ago, 2.5 years ago, I ate a lot more meat.
Mm-hmm.
I ate a lot more red meat and a lot more chicken and fish. And then just kind of really went down to chicken and fish. It was easy. It's easy to do. It's like I'm still like dinners at home. I still need to figure out what I'm going to cook, but it's not hard. to do, and it's not a big deal.
Yeah. I'm looking forward to butternut squash.
Yeah, it's almost time. I know. For good ones. And so, yeah, I really like it. I've noticed a little bit of a difference, mm-hmm. trying to like help clear my head a little bit.
And other parts.
And other parts. In positive ways.
Oh, boy.
You know, also, I was watching, there's been a documentary on HBO now, I think for a couple months, and it's about Robin Williams, and it's called Robin Williams Come Inside My Mind, and it's a really interesting look. I wish it would have been a little bit more in-depth near the end, but just talking about this genius person and the demons. And, you know, one of his children is interviewed and just kind of like, we were born to this dad and he was in this business and our parents weren't, you know, together. And we saw him, you know, maybe 5 or 6 months a year. And that's just the way it is. And you just get used to it. And, but then other comics talking about him and talking about his USO stuff, especially in Afghanistan and Iraq. And Pam Dauber from Mork and Mindy.
Oh.
Mindy. Talking, and it's really great. And it just shows these clips that you might not have seen before. In fact, they show a clip from the 2003 Critics' Choice Awards, which was much smaller than it is now. And there were three nominees for Best Actor. It was Jack Nicholson for About Schmidt, and Daniel Day-Lewis for Gangs of New York, and Robin Williams for 1 Hour Photo. Three nominees. And Salma Hayek is presenting it, and they show this entire clip from beginning to end. She's presenting it, and she goes, oh my, we have a tie. And the tie is awarded to Jack Nicholson and Daniel Day-Lewis. So there's three people, there's a tie, so one guy doesn't win, and that's Robin Williams. So they get up, and Jack Nicholson says, I wouldn't have smoked so much if I knew I was going to win. Robin, can you come up and accept this award? So he accepts the award as Jack Nicholson. And then it basically becomes like 5 minutes of him doing a bit, and Selma Hayek gives him, she goes, here, you can have this. This is your prize. And he goes, oh, great, their names. So she hands him the envelope. And it's just... to see, like, what a genius he was, mm-hmm. and also how, I forgot how Mork and Mindy began. It's because Gary Marshall's son saw Star Wars and thought it was really cool, and so he wanted Alien. He wanted an alien somewhere. So Gary Marshall brought Mork in on Happy Days. He lands outside of Richie's house.
I forgot, yeah.
I forgot, too, like, such a... And that's where Mork and Mindy started. And it was such a big deal that he got his own series with Pam Dauber.
Oh, that was crazy. That was a great show. I loved it.
Great show. And they showed clips of then Mork and Mindy were just roommates. And then they became, Nanu Nanu. And then they became boyfriend and girlfriend. Then they became husband and wife. And they had a baby, and it was Jonathan Winters.
Yeah, I remember that. I totally forgot about that. My hero. My comedy hero.
So they showed old clips of Jonathan Winters, like on Jack Parr, where Jack Parr would just say a word, and Jonathan Winters would do like 8 characters about it.
I love that stuff.
And
he was amazing.
And so imagine what he meant to Robin Williams.
Oh, yeah. Oh, my God. He was the Robin Williams of his day. Like, yes. Oh, my God, with all the different...
just as crazy.
Crazy, but all the impersonations and...
And could just riff and riff and riff. So to see them together, because I forgot about that he played the son for like 2 seasons.
That's so funny. I completely, completely forgot.
Oh, boy. And so it's really interesting. Robin Williams, Come Inside My Mind, HBO right now. It's really... very interesting. Billy Crystal is in it, and just a bunch of big people. Yeah.
Amazing.
So before we started today, we did our regular thing of we watched a few things that would help us with the podcast. And one thing was you very quickly and firmly said, give me your reading glasses. And I gave you my reading glasses, and then I just heard you swearing a lot, trying to put your reading glasses together, wearing mine, and we have very different prescriptions.
So I have two pairs of glasses. One pair sucks, and one pair's good. One pair looks cool, the other pair looks bad.
Yes.
One pair works, I can see through them, the other pair gives me migraines.
Yes.
How do I know that? Because the arms of the good ones fell off at Disneyland. And so luckily, the next day, I had my bad ones, because I was smart enough to bring a backup pair so I wouldn't have to spend $98 on a pair of glasses at Disneyland.
That have Mickey on the side.
And then I got a migraine within like 4 hours of using those glasses. So last weekend I went to an antique fair and I brought my glasses and the arm fell off.
Because this particular frame is very good on you.
I put them together. They're skeleton. They're Frankenstein.
They're Frankenstein. Franken
glasses. Anyhow, so at the same time, my sunglasses arm fell off, and I had a broken pair of sunglasses and a broken pair of glasses in my pocket, and now I have to carry this little
screwdriver,
this little mini screwdriver around everywhere
to keep putting it back in.
Yeah, and of course, when you don't have your glasses, you can't see the fucking screw that's like a quarter of a millimeter, you know?
I just heard you go, here you go, fuckers.
You fucking sons of bitches. I'll tighten that. I'll teach you to fall off my face.
Speaking of falling off your face.
Here it is.
Oh, there's the screwdriver that no one can see. I think. But I'm glad you found it.
No, my glasses on. Yep, that's it.
Yeah. So today we are talking about box office bombs.
I wish I had a little button of sound effects right there.
You know, I think about it often because I think how annoying we are to a lot of people. And I think if we had a soundboard, I think this would really clench it.
If we had one that did fart noises, like, oh my God. Every time you said something serious, I go, wah.
I do say a lot of serious when you things.
Like if you're weeping or up, I'm weeping, I just hit the button over and over again. If somebody just feel laughing. Better.
Yeah. Okay. Okay. Bring it focus.
Yeah.
So box office bombs happen all the time. But in the 80s, there was just so many that are just kind of spectacular in how big of a bomb they were. So a few things that we can kind of talk about a bit and put things in perspective are, so Clan of the Cave Bear was this humongous book. It was,
we've talked about it, in fact.
We have.
In our reading episode.
Yes, and it was just this huge book, and then there was another one after that, I think. And then, so Clan of the Cave Bear, it was this big thing. It was starring Daryl Hannah. The poster was really cool. It was a close-up of her face and with white makeup and red makeup on, and it was, I mean, about prehistoric people, if I'm correct.
And like Daryl Hannah is a perfect example of a prehistoric looking person. Like she has that prehistoric look. Like when you think about
to me she looks like a mermaid.
To me she looks like a robot, an android.
Blade Runner. Oh, shit. I didn't even get that. Mm. Where she also wore strong makeup.
Yes.
So to even talk about that, Blade Runner is considered a bomb of the 80s. It was made, and I don't even believe in that, so I didn't even write it down. But it was, you know, its budget as opposed to what it made at the time, it was a bomb. It lost a lot of money. But it became one of, you know, the top 20 movies of all time.
Like, yes. And it's funny how that happens. Some of them do that, and then some of them remain at the bottom of the ladder.
I mean, if you say Blade Runner, people are like, oh my God. It's like everyone's seen it. It's a classic, and it is, you know, considered one of the best movies ever made. But it was considered a bomb when it came out. So Clan of the Cave Bear cost $15 million to make, and it made $1.9 million. The Adventures of Baron Munchausen.
Right, which, then I wish I had that button. Burp, burp. Don't ever let me get one of those.
Oh my God, no.
Or like a duck going whack, whack. Like I would take any.
Speaking of ducks.
Oh yeah.
Adventures of Baron Munchausen. 1988 cost $46.6 million and it brought in $8.1 million.
Wow.
Big Trouble in Little China, which is, I mean, pretty racist. I mean,
I haven't seen it in a long time.
Well, we were going to see it last winter when it was like a special screening, but I felt super bad about it and I couldn't do it. But that was $25 million and it made $11 million. Brazil, $15 million.
Or Terry Gilliam.
Made $9 million, right? The Munchausen 2, right? And Dune.
Yeah.
Which the estimates of how much it cost really vary. So it's between $40 and $55 million because so much money was spent. Mm-hmm. And it grossed $30 million. And then The King of Comedy, which is also considered one of Martin Scorsese's best films. It was Robert De Niro and Sandra Bernhard. She was like the big breakout of that. It was her big break. And it's on all the top best movie lists ever. It was made for $19 million and it made $2 million.
Oof. I mean, how do you lose that much money? What do you do? Do you just go bankrupt, or was that money that you bought? Like, how does that happen?
It's all studio money, and you just lose money, and you make money over here, and you lose money over here. Okay. And so one that I want to start out with, I have a couple that I'm just going to talk quickly about, and then two that are really long, so I need everybody to settle in. But I wanted to talk about One from the Heart. So if you liked La La Land, or if you stopped watching La La Land after the first 90 seconds, like me, it's interesting to see that basically One from the Heart is La La Land. So it was made for $26 million, and it the domestic gross was $636,796.
Wow.
So it didn't even make $1 million. So Francis Ford Coppola was coming off of The Godfather, The Conversation, The Godfather Part 2, and Apocalypse Now.
Also a bender.
And a huge fucking coke bender. And he directed, he put in a lot of his own money at the beginning of the 80s to pour into like this passion project. And it was set in Las Vegas, and all of the songs are by Tom Waits. And it's a huge musical. A lot of the big, you know,
cop rock.
Yeah, like all the songs and everything were like really elaborate, big things like on stages that were like built for millions of dollars, you know, and you only see it for a moment. So the financial bet certainly didn't pay off. Vegas. So he has spent most of his career, like 15 years after this, just making money to repay the debts for this movie. Answering your question about one particular movie. So Terry Garr writes extensively about this in her bio from about 10 years ago. And so it stars Terry Garr and Frederick Forrest. And they're this like couple who are like a warring couple, like they're breaking up, and they, it's like he called it psychological realism and brittle humor mixed with big, huge production numbers.
Brittle humor. Interesting.
And it's like these big, like everyone describes it as like glitzy. And there was she describes in her book a scene where it's outdoors and it rained, but he didn't like the way that the streets looked with the rain. How they looked wet from the rain. So he went and they rented big, huge trucks for the next 4 nights and wet it down the way that he liked it to be wet down. So like shit like that.
Wow.
You know? And so, you know, a lot of people compared it to, compared La La Land to this. And then now all the critics are saying, forget La La Land. Go and watch this now. Watch this movie now and you'll see that it's a brilliant movie. It just wasn't made for 1981. Mm-hmm. The Rotten Tomatoes meter has gone up on this through the years, and it's in the red.
Hmm.
So it might be something interesting to watch, but being made for $26 million and not even making $650,000, under $650,000.
Fuck.
That's bad. That's really bad. And then another one is Heaven's Gate. from 1980. It stars Chris Kristofferson and Christopher Walken. Kristofferson was just coming off of A Star Is Born, or A Star Is Born, as opposed to A Star Is Boring.
That's boring.
Star is boring. The new A Star Is Born is coming out, starring Lady Gaga.
Well, you know I'm going to see that shit.
Oh, yeah, you already pre-ordered. I did it for you. So it was directed by Michael Cimino, who was just coming off of The Deer Hunter, so a very respected director, won the Oscar for it. The Deer Hunter won the Oscar for Best Film. And
that's the guy accused of having a fake name.
That's the guy that you accused of having a fake name, yes. That's not like common knowledge. You were like, that's just not a real name. Much like your not real dogs thing a couple weeks ago.
That's really been a trigger for my depression and anger. You know, I got mad at these kids today. I didn't like actually get mad at them, but I got pissed at them. I didn't direct my anger towards them.
Okay.
But I may have mentioned this several times, but what is it about people and their telephones that they think it's okay to sit at a restaurant and turn on videos and watch videos? So it's just like, it's just the weirdest thing. And so I'm at the taqueria today, chilling out with the cool old school Mexican music playing. And I just, you know, I love the music and I love the food. And I'm just chilling out, having a nice lunch, reading Harry Potter.
You love?
Prisoner of Azkaban. And these fucking people come in and they all three have their phones out and they're all three watching videos, different videos. And it's just super loud. And I'm like, I don't understand.
But not with each other. They're each watching their own.
Yeah. And I'm like, I just don't understand, like, why anyone would go into, like, oh, God. And so it just enraged me. And then I remembered what it was.
What was it?
It's a book about dogs. I came into the bookstore today. It was an encyclopedia of dog breeds. And I flipped through it. Huge, 2 inches thick, you know, 11 inches tall. This thing was huge. 10-pound book, and I flipped through it, and I was like, bullshit, it's all made up.
It's not.
None of these are fake news.
Oh, my God.
And I wrote fake on the inside, and I put it out on the shelf. Anyway, well, keep your phone down when you're around me at a restaurant, please, people.
Well, just keep your phone off. Do not fucking play it. And parents, I'm headphones. Talking to you.
Don't your kids love to hang your earphones like about on your ears and wear your baseball hat sideways like the cool kids do now?
They certainly like to wear their baseball hat sideways. I do know that part.
Clearly entering my late 40s.
So the lure of Heaven's Gate is that so on the sixth day of production, on the sixth day of filming, the production was already 5 days behind schedule.
God.
On the sixth
day. What were they doing on the first day?
Well, there's a lot of shit that went wrong. There's a few problems with a couple of the actors. At the time, white drugs were very, very popular, and that is just conjecture on my part.
And so what actors?
Well, it starred Chris Kristofferson and Christopher Walken.
Okay, so they were all coked up.
Perhaps. Perhaps. I may get a cease and desist, but according to things I've looked at. So it's considered one of the most famous flops of all time. It was made for $44 million, and it made $3.5. United Artists lost so much money on the film that it actually had to be sold.
Really?
They had to sell United Artists to the highest bidder.
And did they make their money back on that?
Well, no, but it was like, it was a good thing to roll over. There were other things coming out that the new studio took. So the film was re-edited and shown at the New York Film Forum in 2013. And quickly before I go to this part, there's all this lore of there were horses killed. It's a Western.
Okay.
It's a Western. So there were horses killed. There were many accidents. It's all about kind of the taking back of this area. And so there were explosions and there was a lot of injuries and it just delays in filming. No one was happy. Perhaps there was cocaine, perhaps. And there used to be this urban legend that in a scene you could see Coke on someone's nose, but I don't think that's true. I looked all over for it and I couldn't find it. So in 2013, they showed it at the New York Film Forum, where it received rave reviews. Critics praised that it was beautiful and had commitment to authenticity, and which, you know, both of those things probably helped it balloon, you know, the budget balloon out of control. And so, so if we were talking today, so inflation adjusted, it lost $114,281,677.
is that even a real number?
I mean, I've never heard of such a number. So, but Heaven's Gate, I mean, we watched the preview tonight, and we were like 11, so we were pretty young, but it does look beautiful, and apparently this new version is available, so you can rent it and find it from 2013.
Fantastic. That makes me think we should do a Westerns episode.
Ooh, yeah, Lust in the Dust.
Young Guns, Silverado.
Oh, yeah.
All that kind of stuff.
Silverado was huge.
That would be a cool episode.
The Man from Snowy River?
Yep. That would work.
Yeah. That was like my dad's favorite movie.
Anyway, just something.
That's a good idea. I'm going to write that down.
Well, once upon a time when I was 13 years old, I just turned 13.
Okay.
In fact, in the summer of 1983.
Okay.
A little film came out called Krull.
Yes.
And Krull was awful.
End of story.
It was awful, but I loved it. I loved it because it had laser rods and bad guys that looked like stormtroopers, but they were medieval fantasy things.
So there was like knights and stuff, right?
Yeah.
But in space.
It was like Star Wars and Lord of the Rings mixed in a giant batch of awesomeness. Krull cost $50 million to make.
And how much did it make?
It made $16
million. I mean, that's bad.
That's pretty bad. I mean, that's not as bad as...
Today, that loss would be $344,586,622.
Wow. It was awesome. It was a fantasy film, you know, in the vein of Star Wars and kind of Lord of the Rings. There was, and almost like Excalibur, there was a hero, and he was on this planet called Krull, and there was this bad guy and this bad lady, and I mean, it was terrible. It was directed by Peter Yates, and I didn't know who he was. He directed a bunch of episodes of The Saint.
Oh yeah.
In the 60s.
Sure.
Written by Stanford Sherman, who wrote Ice Pirates, Any Which Way You Can, and a bunch of episodes of the original Batman in the 60s, and The Man from U.N.C.L.E.
Ice Pirates, I actually meant to put on that first list.
Yeah.
Also a bomb.
Yeah, I was going to do Ice Pirates. I was going to add that to the list.
Oh, that's why I didn't put it on the list, because I think you're going to do it. That's starring the inimitable Robert Urich.
Is it really?
Robert Urich, yeah.
Oh, yeah.
With his shaggy hair.
Oh, my God.
Yeah.
Starred Kenneth Marshall. I was like, who the hell is he? I guess he was on episodes of Hunter and Quantum Leap. You remember that Heat of the Night TV show?
Sure.
Carol O'Connor.
Yeah, Carol O'Connor.
He was on there. How the West Was Won. We could actually add that to our batch. It also starred Lysette Anthony, who I know nothing about.
She was around a lot. Lysette Anthony.
Okay.
Yep.
So, yeah. But what I thought was cool is Freddie Jones is in it. And Freddie Jones was... David Lynch used him in Dune, also Elephant Man and Wild at Heart. So he was kind of a David Lynch sort of actor, and I've always loved him.
Oh yeah, I know who he is.
He was also in Firefox and Firestarter and Black Cauldron.
Yeah, he's cool.
Yeah,
he's like super a super cool character actor.
He plays Thufir in Dune, and he's just great. And Dune is, I love Dune and I hate it at the same time. It's such an awful movie and there's so many reasons to hate it, but there's so many reasons to love it too. And his character is really one of them. His character is just awesome.
Well, Sting.
Yeah.
Did you ever see the one that they put out in the mid 2000s, like 2004 or five, where it's like a 5-hour version of it
Yeah.
with the storyboards?
The storyboards. Yeah. It's confusing.
Included in the middle of it?
Well, see, I have... My thing about Dune is I'm a huge David Lynch fan, and I love David Lynch, but I'm not one of the people who will say David Lynch could do no wrong, because Dune is fucking awful, and he did not read the book, and he was not interested in... I don't even know why he decided that he was going to do it. And he didn't know anything about the story. And so it's kind of a shame. And he himself, you know, he barely even acknowledges Dune. His name is not on the credits of Dune anymore. He's had his name removed from all of the credits.
Oh, he did?
Yeah. So his, I mean, you can find like original copies and stuff, and his, of course, his name is mentioned, but he's not officially credited on Dune anymore, which is kind of crazy. But it also had Liam Neeson and Robbie Coltrane, Hagrid from Harry Potter.
Oh, like a young Liam Neeson?
And they're very, very early roles for them. Most interesting is the music by one of my favorite film composers, James Horner.
Oh, really?
Who actually was killed in a plane crash about 3 years ago. But he was amazing. He did the soundtrack for Star Trek II, The Wrath of Khan, Titanic, Cocoon, Honey, I Shrunk the Kids, An American Tale, Avatar, Glory, Braveheart, Field of Dreams, Apollo 13, and Legends of the Fall.
I'm looking at IMDb right now at Kroll, so I could be a little familiar with the people. And is that you?
That is not me.
That looks like it could be a child Tom in this still from Kroll.
It looks like my dad, actually. Planet Kroll is invaded by an entity known as the Beast and his army of futuristic slayers. Slayers are bad guys. They travel the galaxy in a mountain-like spaceship called the Black Fortress. A prince and a fellowship of companions set out to rescue his bride from a fortress of alien invaders who have arrived on their home planet. It is really, really bad. It's a 35% rating on... on Rotten Tomatoes. And I think that's up over the years because it is slightly interesting. They dumped...
Well, it's a thing that people know about now.
I mean, yeah. You know, my favorite part of it, of course, at that time, when I was 13, one of my things that I was really into was ninjas. You know, ninjas and kung fu and you know, Conan the Barbarian and anything that had to do with swords and spears and blades and bows and arrows. And our hero carries a weapon called the glaive. And the glaive is this five-bladed ninja star that you push a button in the middle and the five blades shoot out from the side and you throw it. And you throw it really hard and you get those guys. But in the trailer we saw, like, he throws it and he's like, eh.
Yeah, he pushes it and throws it.
He barely goes. He's like, just go yourself. But a glaive in real life is not that weapon. That's, for some reason, they chose the name glaive. But a glaive is actually from, you know, the medieval times. It's a big, long pole with a huge blade on the end.
Oh, that's what a glaive is?
Yeah. So for some reason, they decided to call it the glaive. And, you know, there's tarantulas in it and, you know, giant spiders in it. And there's monsters and there's action and there's love and there's swashbuckling. And so it's
action,
all those horrible,
love.
You know, all those horrible things in the wake of... you know, Star Wars madness that came about. And it was just awful.
You know, the trailer reminds me, and I remember it. It reminds me of, like, Buck Rogers.
Yeah.
And that type of show and Battlestar Galactica, the original from mm-hmm. the 70s. Like, it looks like a show.
It really does.
It looks like a TV show and not a major film.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So anyway, go watch it. It's great. You'll love it. You will love it.
Well, I want to talk about a couple of films, neither of which I don't think you saw, but know of. So the first one that I want to talk about is really considered one of the biggest box office bombs and one of the worst movies of all time, and it is called Ishtar. And Ishtar is from 1987, starring Warren Beatty and Dustin Hoffman, directed and written by Elaine May. She was known as one of the best comedic writers and one of the best comedic teams. She was part of Nichols and May, which was the famous director Mike Nichols and her. And in the 50s and 60s, they were the go-to comedy writers. People would go to them for their specials. that they would have, because a lot of singers would just have specials on a Thursday night.
Oh, I've seen their records by, right? the pile at the flea market.
And they started in the Village, in the West Village in the 50s as this comedy duo, and they would do these kind of improv-y things together and write these amazing little sketches. And so they were very famous, and she was very famous. And so it was made for $51 million, and it made $14 million. Beatty wanted Elaine May to have a successful film experience. He felt that she was writing these movies where directors and executives, and she was directing movies where they didn't really respect her, and they didn't really give her the due that he thought that she should get as one of the comedy greats. She did a rewrite on Reds, an uncredited rewrite on Reds, his big Oscar-winning film. And she co-wrote Heaven Can Wait, his movie. Was that when he... Heaven Can Wait was, like, from the 80s, right?
Yeah. Was it from, like, 79?
Maybe. But, yeah, so Heaven Can Wait was a very big success for him. And I think that he played this very rich playboy who dies and then tries to make amends and not die or something like that. But whatever. Hoffman also loved Elaine May, as she did another uncredited rewrite of Tootsie.
Interesting.
So they both loved this woman. They wanted her to have a big, successful thing. So they both said, great, let's produce this movie. She's going to write it and direct it, and we're going to star in it. But wouldn't it be funny if me, Dustin Hoffman, were the real cold, chilly guy, the real cool guy, who was, you know, kind of flustered, and you, Warren Beatty, you play the guy who can't get anything right and fumbles along and is kind of stupid.
I love it.
Why don't we switch those roles? And they were both like, we are in. So they, this movie was filmed in North Africa. It is just these hilariously miscast men. So they play like these delusional, like really shitty lounge singers, and they think that if they go to Morocco, that they're going to be able to break into the business of songwriting, and then they can sing their songs and be on stage, and they can do that in Morocco.
I mean,
already laugh a fucking minute.
I mean, it's so like, why? That would probably be funny, like in, you know, 1930.
Well, so that's what she was getting at.
That's what
she was getting. Like, she was doing the road pictures, the Bob Hope and Bing Crosby, the Road 2 pictures. They did 3 or 4 or 5, right?
Yeah.
And so that's what she was really doing. She was bringing that into, she wanted to bring that into the modern
age. And Morocco
age.
Is very, you know, and they, in her mind, exotic and that's far away.
Their movies all took place in these exotic locations, right? One of them probably being Morocco. So she turns it on the head by they want to break into showbiz, but they get on their way to Morocco. They get to this town called Ishtar, and then that's where everything happens. When I say everything, I mean
a lot of racism.
A lot of racism. And you know what? I'm going to go ahead and say sexism too.
Yeah.
And that's just pure conjecture at this point, but I think I'm spot on.
Go ahead and say it. It was
so
a movie from the
80s. Here's the plot. So these delusional lounge singers go to Morocco. They get stuck in Ishtar, only to get made pawns in a political chess match between the CIA and a local militia. That was on the poster. So he's, you know, Beatty's the more neurotic, dopey one. Hoffman's the badass, as you would expect. She made a lot of changes while they were filming, and production was really, really tough. So she had a very bad toothache, but she would not allow any of the local dentists to work on her. So she was in a lot of pain.
That explains the whole movie.
Perhaps taking medication. It got to the point where she had Final Cut, Dustin Hoffman had Final Cut, and Warren Beatty had Final Cut of the picture. Like,
wait,
three people can't have Final Cut.
No.
And so she would be shown the dailies and she would write down pages and pages and pages of notes, but refuse to talk about those notes with anyone.
Hmm.
They filmed for months in North Africa.
Well, why didn't the two of them look at each other and go, hey, Warren, yeah, this, I think this is going to be bad. Like, we need to do something.
We love Elaine, but we need to try and help her and figure something out and see where she is right now. So they went looking for dunes to shoot a very pivotal large piece of this movie when they get lost in the desert. And they went looking for dunes for days, but she wouldn't speak. She had her head wrapped in gauze, and people describe her looking like a stormtrooper. And she would be under umbrellas or in a car. And after they found the dunes and got the clearance to work there, she said she wanted a flat surface. So it took them like 12 days to make these dunes into a flat surface. So just shit like that, everything like...
And then Francis Ford Coppola came along with his fucking water trucks and ruined everything.
Yes. So lots of delays, lots of overspending. Funnily enough, Warren Beatty and Dustin Hoffman were not that fond of each other. So they were stuck in the North African desert together for months with a movie that they knew was going to be bad. I mean, the trailer is cringeworthy.
It really is.
I mean, it's hard to watch. And so it's just, it's a very interesting story. There is a book about it. And people say if you look at it now, it's a esoteric lark. So perhaps...
I mean, no part of the trailer was funny at all.
And
no part of it.
67% of it was offensive. And really offensive.
Anyway, we love you, Elaine.
And I did love Elaine May. I really did. 34% on Rotten Tomatoes.
Okay.
It's actually not as bad as I thought it would be. But I think a lot of people are doing that art house thing now of looking at it again.
Yeah.
And then, you know, pretentiously saying pretending that it's great.
Pretending it's much better now.
Yeah, which I'm sure it's not.
It's a cinematic masterpiece. And I was thinking back to Francis Ford Coppola. He did a film in 1984 called Cotton Club.
Oh, yeah.
Which was also a horrible musical with a budget of $47 million.
Shit.
And it made, actually, its total net loss was $32.1 million was its loss.
And that's Richard Gere and Lynette McKee.
Total loss was $76 million.
Holy.
Yeah, it was awful. It was one that had Gregory Hines in it. And,
yes.
And Gregory and Maurice Hines. And yeah, that's a lot of money to, like, how do you lose? Like, what?
And that was a big, like, they were touting that as like a prestige movie. And it was it shot in black and white? Like sepia?
I don't remember.
I think it was.
Oh, geez.
And yeah, that was huge bomb.
But the other one I was thinking of was Sean Penn and Madonna in Shanghai Surprise.
Oh, shit. Oh, God, yes.
Was that the same year?
86.
86. That was Madonna's first film after Desperately Seeking Susan.
Which was like a hit. Not a huge hit, but a hit.
But it won a bunch of awards.
Razzies.
Let me read off the list of awards here, just for if anybody's wondering. Six Razzies. Six Razzie Award nominations, including Worst Actor, Sean Penn, Worst Director, Worst Original Song, George Harrison, Worst Picture, Worst Screenplay, and it gave Madonna her first Razzie Award for Worst Actress. I mean, tell me, I want to see that movie so bad now.
Oh, I did see it. I saw it in the theater.
Lasseter was another one of those, like, weird, like, that came out after Raiders of the Lost Ark that was, like, an adventure. Remember with Tom Selleck?
Mm-hmm. Yes.
I don't remember.
It was like a 40s thing.
Yeah. And he wore a tuxedo. And
this was set in like the 30s and 40s, mm-hmm. right?
Yeah.
And
the one that I really wanted to do, turned out it wasn't really a bomb. And I thought it was because when I saw it, it was one of the worst movies I'd ever seen. It was a little film called King Solomon's Mines.
Oh, yeah. Richard Gere and Sharon Stone.
Mm-mm.
Oh, no?
No.
No, not Richard Chamberlain. Richard Chamberlain.
Yeah, Richard Chamberlain. And that's another, you know, also kind of a post-Raiders of the Lost Ark, You know, they're on these adventures, and he's wearing the tan safari suit with the hat with the tiger band headband on it. And I just remember going, God, it is so bad. Like, I just fucking hated it. Even as a kid with all the cool machine guns and the cool, you know, machetes and battles and stuff. And when I read about it last week, doing my research for it, I realized that it was a spoof.
A spoof of, like, Romancing the Stone type of a thing.
A spoof of Raiders of the Lost Ark and Romancing Stone and that kind of film. And I was like, oh, I guess I thought it was supposed to be a serious movie and it was bad, but it actually was supposed to be bad. So now I want to see it again. It wasn't technically a bomb, which is why I didn't do it.
It's, like, campy.
Yeah. Yeah.
I mean, I would see it. I remember it. I would like to see it again. I would like to see that. I would like to see Ice Pirates.
Yes.
I would like to see Star Babies. Do you remember that?
No.
That's like a... Yeah. Like Jamie Gertz and all those people. It's, you know, to go back quickly to Shanghai Surprise, the, you know, Sean Penn and Madonna were married, you know? And so, but it, I mean, it was just a huge bomb. It was just a huge bomb.
Some people might call it a flop. Others may call it, and this is not my, I didn't, I can't. It was known as, it acquired the nickname. And duly so for being so awful as Flop Suey.
Yeah.
Because it was Shanghai Surprise. And
oh my God. I remember Madonna was like a high end lady who went there to do like foreign aid work. And Sean Penn was a rascally con man type of guy.
He was looking for opium.
Well, of course he was.
He was also looking for opium.
Our last movie of the evening boasts 15% on Rotten Tomatoes. And it is a very famous bomb of the 80s, and it is Howard the Duck.
Quack. That's when I want that button. Quack, quack.
It's from 1986. It was... written by Steve Gerber, directed by Willard Hook, and it was produced by George Lucas. It is the first ever Marvel movie.
No kidding.
Because Howard the Duck was a Marvel comic book character. Hmm. And he was this dark, like, detective duck, and it was like a noir type thing.
And George Lucas just kept going, though. He just kept going with this shit.
Yeah.
Wow. He didn't stop when it got bad. He just kept going with the bad.
Well, there's a couple things in here that he did have to stop.
Okay.
That I will tell you about. It stars Leah Thompson, Jeffrey Jones, and Tim Robbins. And Chip Zine, who is a character actor, been around forever. And he is the voice of Howard the Duck. Because there's a song called Howard the Duck in the movie. Yeah.
I'm giving it a Razzie right now.
So, you know, the movie is about a duck who lives on another planet, and it's kind of like a parallel universe. So when we meet Howard, he's in his apartment, and he walks in, and he's got clothes on with a little hole in the back of his pants for his tail, and he opens his fridge and gets a beer, and he reads Play Duck magazine, and behind him is... My Little Chickadee, or My Little Mallard or something.
No, that was it, My Little Chickadee.
My Little Chickadee, which was a Mae West movie. But it stars Mae Nest. So it's all these, and then there's like a Raiders of the Lost Ark poster, but it's like Mallards of the Lost Ark, and it's a duck on, you know, in the, so it's this weird like parallel thing that they draw.
He's just trying to cross, you know, sell or something.
Yes. I am going to just do like a quick, like 5 minute thing on this. If you really want to hear some amazing shit about Howard the Duck, please go to another amazing podcast called How Did This Get Made? They've been around for many, probably, I think they've been around for like 8 years now, but it's Paul Scheer, June Diane Raphael, and Jason Mantzoukas, and they have a live show of the podcast about Howard the Duck, and it is crazy, and it's with Kristen Schaal, who's a really great comedian. She's Louise on Bob's Burgers, and so please listen to that, because they really go through a lot of this stuff, but there are, like, duck breasts, but so like I know that sounds like a duck breast, but like it's duck boobies. Like the in one of the women in his apartment building, they pan through all these apartments, and one of the duck women is in her tub, and you see her duck boobies, and so it's like really just these weird. It's really weird. That's probably
what, yeah.
And that's probably why you didn't see it.
Well, I remember seeing it in my dad's sci-fi magazine, being advertised in a sci-fi magazine.
Oh, yes. Now,
because he was from another planet. And
yes.
Okay, so that makes sense. I didn't ever see it, and that's probably not why, because I saw tons of movies that had shit I don't know how I saw.
Well, this script was supposed to be an animated film based on the Marvel comic, but George Lucas had a contractual obligation to make a live-action film, so he picked this one, where they had to make duck suits and... put little people in them.
He didn't just take an old Ewok costume and paint it?
Oh, no. The making of this suit and trying to get his the feathers on top of his head to stand up when he got aroused was like a big deal. So there's all these production difficulties, as you would imagine, and a not great results from the response from the test screenings, because people are like, what? So it was released in August 1st of 1986. It was a critical and commercial failure. It was nominated for 7 Razzie Awards. You really do need your button. And so it made $15 million from a $35 million budget. It's considered one of the worst films of all time as well. And so Howard, you know, it tanked so badly so quickly. Like on that first day, it was just such a failure. The then president of Universal, Frank Price, resigned after it flopped.
Over that? I mean...
Yeah, over that. Well, shit. I mean, imagine that. I mean, this was going to be a huge summer thing.
You okay that amount of money and you like...
And this was going to be like their summer, Universal summer blockbuster was going to be this movie. And it was, I remember being really excited about it. And then right away you heard how bad it was. And then no one went. So something good did come out of Howard. Lucas, in debt to the movie studio, and he was in debt. So the movie and the his Skywalker Ranch, so he was forced to sell his CGI branch of Lucasfilm.
Oh.
To Steve Jobs. Industrial Light
and Magic. Is that what it was?
And so, he kept that. Okay. But his CGI branch.
Okay.
Of Lucasfilm to Steve Jobs.
Hmm.
And it would eventually become Pixar.
Interesting.
So all the advancements that they had already made, all the things that they were doing, then turned into Pixar, and they had to sell it off.
Hmm.
So that's interesting. So Howard is 27. He lives on Duck World, very similar to Earth, but inhabited by anthropomorphic ducks. And it orbits twin moons. So he's reading the latest issue of Play Duck magazine, and his armchair begins to, like, shake. And it propels him out of his apartment building into outer space and into a wormhole, and he lands in Cleveland. So, you know, he arrives in Cleveland in a garbage can, and he encounters a woman who's being attacked by thugs. And they're real, like, 80s punks.
Yeah, we're gonna get you.
Yeah,
guys.
Like, you see? And they were like 40s type thugs in 80s bodies, and they had their hair was up and like, and it was pink and it was in a mohawk, and they had on a leather a denim vest. So he what people would describe as unique martial arts, he defeats all these thugs, and he meets the woman, and her name is Beverly Switzler, played by Leah Thompson. Who literally, like, think about Leah Thompson right now. She is fucking flying high. She, Back to the Future, was a humongous hit. She was on everybody's lips. Some Kind of Wonderful was after this.
Okay.
That brought her back to good standing.
Thank God.
But she's coming off this big movie. Now she's going to star in a movie.
With a duck.
Opposite a duck. But she's going to star in a movie. Her name's going to be above the title.
Hmm.
By the way, it's not. But that's what it was promised. So Beverly takes Howard to the scientist friend who happens to work at the science factory thing. And it's Tim Robbins in one of his first movies.
Interesting.
And she is in a band. And it's called Cherry Bomb.
Yeah.
And so Howard becomes their manager after going to the unemployment office.
Well, the duck's got to do what a duck's got to do.
Yes. So it's just this convoluted thing. Tim Robbins turns crazy. Jeffrey Jones is in it, and he turns crazy. And Howard has to, everybody tries to get Howard and whatever. It's horrible. It's a bomb. At the end of the movie, there is a big, the girls are like, we have a special song for you, Howard. And that's where they sing Howard the Duck. And everybody dances and sings on stage. And Howard does like a Chuck Berry, like one leg leaning, you know, leading thing. And Howard's playing guitar. And I mean, it's just, it's dismal.
I never saw it. I can picture it. I can see it. I can see its awfulness.
I can smell it from here.
It stinks. That movie stinks.
It does stink. So that's our bombs of the 80s.
Quack, quack, quack.
So
I'm going to do that every episode from now on.
You are your own son.
I'm not.
You're Michael Winslow from Police Academy.
I loved him.
Yeah.
Well, is that real? Did he really do that stuff?
Yeah, that was his thing. Yeah, that was his stand-up act.
I remember being him. Yeah, I was going to say, I remember him doing stand-up.
And he would do like the dripping water. I can't do it, obviously.
Yeah.
When I go. Kind of.
I can almost do it.
Kind of. But so, you know, I want to say that we have our website.
I looked at it today, and you're doing an awesome job, and everybody should go look at it.
Thank you.
The picture of me is bigger than Hank's. So.
It is. It is, but just the picture. Hey, let's not.
My bio is pretty big, too.
Let's not put them on the table.
We're going to take a few sentences out of my bio.
My bio is bigger than yours.
Make it fit.
So it's TomandHank.com.
Yep.
Real simple.
Yep.
TomandHank.com. Check us out. You can link to episodes from there. Yeah, you will, because I'll do it before I release this. You can link to episodes from there. You can look at all of the posters that we put out on Instagram and stuff, because none of you, the amount of people that listen to us and the amount of people that follow us on social media is very different. So you guys should follow us on social media.
You should.
And please subscribe, rate, and review on iTunes. That's very important to us.
Tell us what you want to hear. Tell us what you're interested in. Give us, if you have an idea of something interesting that you were into, let us know, and maybe we were into that weird thing too. And
yep, and it's TomandHankPodcast@gmail.com.
But just email me. Don't bother with the other guy.
Well, it's the same thing. Oh. And you can also reach us through our website. There's a contact form on there. Mm-hmm. And so, but also please rate and review and subscribe on iTunes. That is very important to us. It helps us get up in the ratings and gets us a little more known. It gets us featured if we have a lot of people do it. So thank you so much.
Also put a link on all of your websites.
Yeah, just do that. Why don't you put a link on all of your websites?
And make them all direct right to us.
Yeah. I think that sounds great. And so thank you for listening. We appreciate everyone so much.
And remember, a fake dog is no dog of mine.
Well, I just don't. Stay awesome.
Stay rad.
Bye.